Look up there in the sky. It's a bird, a plane. It's Handsome Boys Comics Hour.
Those boys are so handsome.
One writer,
one artist,
one weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I am your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
I'm your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
And we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your hope for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. We are a day late, but not a dollar short. We are a little worse for wear after the weekend.
It's been rough. Robbie partied, had a little too many mimosas.
Eric ate too many ribs, I suppose.
I don't know what happened. Whatever it is, I don't recommend it.
No, we were ill yesterday, hence the no podcast.
Yeah.
There was five people in my house. We were the only ones that got sick.
Yep. I think it's a conspiracy.
My chemtrails, dude.
I know. It's slash chemtrails. Our conspiracy.
Chemtrails and vaccinations.
Yes.
That's what happened.
I'm going to call Jenny. She's going to set us straight.
She will. She'll help us out.
Yeah. Anyway. I don't recommend it.
We're both a little weary and got things to do, like sleep. So we're going to jump straight into checking in. That was a great noise.
That was the noisiest of noises.
That was the best noise. I'm going to start us off because we ain't got no time to spare.
No time to dick around here.
No time to dick around. I got two podcasts I want to recommend.
Okay.
Check in with them. I briefly discussed one already with you, but I'm going to officially make it a check.
A check. Sure.
Checking in.
Writing some checks. So good.
The first
for
one. Yes, writing some checks. I don't know if I can cash them. I'm going to post-date those checks.
I gotta wait for some things to clear.
Yeah. First one is called Backstory. Have you ever heard of this one, Eric?
Unless you've told me about it, no.
I have not told you about it. Backstory is, it's, I think, done in conjunction with NPR somehow.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like it's an NPR thing, but it's not officially, I don't know. But I think it's actually broadcast on the radio somewhere as well. But it's, Backstory is three American history dudes. One is from the 18th century, one does the 19th century, and one is the 20th century. Those are their areas of expertise. They tackle a subject in American history and kind of give a kind of cultural background for it. Hence the title Backstory. The couple ones I listened to about the War of 1812. I listened to one about health food, which is really interesting. I'm trying to think about other ones. I've listened to about four or five of them. They're all very interesting, very well researched. They bring in other people sometimes to do little... I mean, it's none of it's very... They're only like an hour program, so obviously they can't cover any of that and really... Can't really cover everything about it, obviously. It's not like Hardcore History where you have a five-hour podcast or anything like that. But it really does... It touches on subjects, you know, it kind of hits highlights... And really gives you kind of very interesting details. It's very entertaining. And I applaud anyone who can make history podcasts and make them interesting. Another one I heard was about how we memorialize World War I. Because there's, you know, we have World War II Memorial, we have Vietnam Memorial, we even have Korean War Memorial in Washington. We do not have a World War I Memorial, and they touch about how there's like, apparently, there's over like 10,000 memorials throughout the nation. They're just very tiny. Stuff like that. It's very interesting. And there's lots of them. They're generally about an hour long. So they're not, you know, you're not digging in for five. Again, they don't require the endurance of a Hardcore History where it's like 3 or 4 hour podcasts.
You don't have to listen to Dan Carlin yammer on forever
with his slight southern twang.
I just think he sounds like Rush Limbaugh.
He does not sound like Rush Limbaugh to me. I can actually listen to him. I can listen to him talk. I cannot listen to Rush Limbaugh talk for much length at all.
I would have never, I wouldn't have thought about it until he, you know, he talked about working with Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah. Upon reflection, it is kind of clear that that's where he's, at least stylistically.
Yes. Politically, no.
No. The other podcast this was one I talked to you about. It's called Penn Sunday School. It's pretty fairly popular. I think most people who listen to podcasts a lot at least have heard of it. But it's Penn Jilletta, Penn and Teller. He does a weekly show. It's him and a couple of buddies who work in Vegas, entertainers. I believe one's a juggler and one's a comedian / magician as well. I'm not sure. But it's him and his friends just kind of talking about whatever they want to. I think 2 or 3 weeks ago, he told a really interesting story about him as a young juggler, a teenage juggler, as a punk juggling group in the early 70s. All those juggling punks. And, he's a very good, he's the voice of Penn and Teller. He's been doing this for decades now. So he's a very good storyteller. He knows how to talk to the audience really well. His viewpoint is kind of unique because he's a pretty well-known libertarian and atheist. And he's an intelligent person who is not the worst example of either of those views. Like, he's not annoyingly atheist or annoyingly libertarian. He gives you reasons why he believes what he believes. He talks about the news sometimes, talks about stories. They talked about his friend going on a cruise ship and cutting through the Panama Canal and what's it like working on a cruise ship. And he's like, and it was pretty interesting. He made the point that if you want to be a professional entertainer, listen to this story about working on a cruise ship, because that's might be like, if you ever are a professional entertainer, that's like a down in the trenches kind of entertainer, because that's what most who make a living are. And he just made a point like, hey, listen to this, because this is what your life is going to be like if you want to do this. And he talks, it's very interesting. I liked his show Bullshit. I think you mentioned that we watched some of the episode or two together. I think.
I can't remember when, but it seems like something we would have done.
Yeah, I liked Bullshit for the most part, and this is more of his kind of that view on the world. And it is rambly. They're generally longer. He's good enough at being a radio guy that it doesn't bother me. Good enough radio guy that I can deal with him not being strict. I mean, it's if you like a podcast that is strictly on topic and is very tight, this is not it. But it is, if you like Penn Jilletta, you think he's interesting at least, it's good. So I'd recommend both Backstory and Penn Sunday School.
Well, Nate,
what do you got, Eric? More drawing? I know you did that.
Certainly more drawing. Being really sick. I'd say the only thing that I can really list is I started listening to The Selfish Gene. Do you know what The Selfish Gene is?
Yeah, I've heard of it. I've been actually wanted to check in on it. I wanted to check it out.
The audio book is read by a snotty atheist and a Time Lord.
Really?
Yes.
Which one is that?
Well, did you know that Richard Dawkins is married to she was a companion on Doctor Who?
Oh, really?
Yeah, Lala Ward. She was a
She's married to Richard Dawkins.
She's married to Richard Dawkins.
I did not know that.
Yeah, okay. And that was Romana. She was one of the regenerations of Romana. She was the one. If you watch the old episode with Tom Baker in Paris, they go to the Louvre. Lala Ward's in that.
Right over my head. Fly by.
You don't know what Paris is?
I know what Paris is. I understood what all those words are, but I do not know exactly.
That was calculated that I used all the words that you know and did not tell you in Chinese.
I appreciate that. You're always looking out, Eric. Good looking out.
I know.
Selfish Gene.
The Selfish Gene. It's not as easy as I would have thought it would have been. And it is, it is Dawkins at his snottiest. Oh my God. He is pretty much insufferable in this book. There's one section where he's reading I don't know if it was in, cause he's reading the original edition with footnotes from like the 1986 edition. The original edition was written in like the mid to late 70s.
Right.
I don't know. He's very convinced of all the rightness of his views, which is fine. He's a little insufferable at points.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's very interesting stuff. A lot of it. He frames, one of the things that's interesting about it is he frames all of evolution from the perspective of genes as opposed right. to the perspective of animals or groups of animals. So it's not about species or individuals and the survival of that as much as it is sort of a struggle at the genetic level,
mm-hmm.
which is really interesting. It's a very interesting perspective. There's all kinds of interesting facts in it, none of which I can really repeat in succinct arguments, but it's terribly interesting stuff. And he is a very snotty young man, when he wrote this. So he's young and full of beans. You should read it.
Yeah. When I look on Reddit and I think there was a Dawkins AMA at one point, which that makes perfect sense, but most people, it seems on there, a lot of them respect him because of all of his science work before he
yes.
was known as the militant atheist.
Yes.
Like, he's become mostly that recently, but
yes.
he was really, originally, he was just a very well-regarded science writer.
He was a militant scientist.
Yeah, and not an atheist, first
yeah.
and foremost.
I mean, it even at this point, this was his first book, and he... all of those views come through,
right?
But there's no way, really. I mean, you have to really have your brain compartmentalized to read this stuff and not just think, oh, well, you know, there's no way that this stuff was created by an intelligent designer. I mean, I don't particularly think that, I don't know. I don't look down my nose anymore at people with religious views, but there's, yeah. there's nothing but cold rationality that describes how animals have evolved. And he thumbs through it with a very fine tooth comb. It's all very interesting. There, in his introduction, he said that there were students and people that had read his book that said it sort of ruined their life, which I thought was fascinating.
Really?
Yeah, they said it ruined their life and that they just saw the world as like sort of cold and amoral and horrible after the fact, which, I mean, I don't know. I don't particularly see it as such.
No, I don't.
I think
it's one side of it's the kind of the scientific side of but you can color things with human emotion. And
yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, you can, and I think even at the level, like you can appreciate like how all animals are sort of controlled and, you know, created in the likeness of their genes and all these things, and how, you know, it's a fight for genes to survive and compete with one another and, you know, to get along with each other, to collaborate with each other. I don't know. You can even look at life in this way, and you know, it's exactly like Darwin said. There's grandeur in this view of life. You don't particularly have to read this book and then go cut your wrists.
No, there's another book. It's definitely focused on humans. It's
right.
Explicitly called Sperm Wars. Have you ever heard about that or read it?
It is on my to read list.
I have a copy. I can lend it to you.
Neat.
If you want to actually read it, not just listen to audiobook.
I will borrow your Sperm Wars.
Yeah, it's similar, but it's more about humanity and how genetics influence our reproductive urges and choices.
Yes.
And I could see how it can be viewed the same way, but it's you just use it to color your viewpoints, not necessarily overwhelm them.
I think it's important to know these underpinnings. I mean, we're still people.
Right.
But that sort of exists on a level on top of all that garbage.
Yes, exactly.
You know, it's good to know sort of why you do the insane things you do.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I think that's about it.
About it. So
a snotty scientist and a Time Lord.
Yeah, but still, I think that was, for, and you drew a lot. Some pretty drawings that I saw because Eric was visiting Sweet Academy. I saw him. He drew me as an orc. It looked pretty cool.
And
I told him to.
He did. He did not tell me to vomit, but I did that for probably 6 hours.
You did a lot of it. You were a champ.
It was horrible. I am so sore.
It's never good. It's always bad.
It's never fun.
No.
But Jesus Christ.
This week in checking in and vomit, I think we're good. So
yes,
we're going to move on.
That's enough vomit forever.
Yes, forever. We'll see how long. It's been one day. We'll see how long we can build that record up.
I know.
Next up, we got our segment is the floppiest part of the week.
Mm.
And that segment is Weekly Floppies. Weekly Floppies is our show where Eric and I talk about the week's books. At least a selection of them. Tell you what we thought about them. Tell them if you should add them to your pool list. If you should buy them or do not buy them. This week we are starting off with a Dark Horse book. So pull up your crappy app if you're buying digitally.
It's called that, isn't it? Crappy app.
The crap app. No, actually, I don't know what happened to it. If they had like some update at some point, because mine is moving a little bit crisper.
Hmm. Mine is not because I have an iPad. Yeah, I have an iPad that will never update.
It's just a caveman tablet.
Yes.
Forever.
It looks like it's got Fred Flintstone's signature on it.
So we're doing, this week we are doing, I've been meaning to check into these Fire and Stone books because they've been running multiple ones and they're going to have Kelly Sue is like editing all these and writing a one that's going to tie everything up, all these different series and tie them together. I was like, well, let's read one and see how it goes. So this week we are doing Aliens vs. Predator, Fire and Stone, number one. All these are titled Prometheus Fire and Stone or Alien Fire and Stone. This is Aliens vs. Predator Fire and Stone. And let's see, script by Christopher Sabella, art by Ariel Olivetti, letters by Nate Picos of Blambot. I follow him on the Twitter.
I do as well. It does see, it even says of Blambot.
Yeah. Frankly, this book, I do not know what's happening.
Yeah, it doesn't give you enough to...
I have no idea what's going on. I mean, I know what predators are. I know what aliens are.
You know what aliens are.
I know what these at least the Geiger aliens are, the xenomorphs. I understand what they are. I do not know what this human guy with no skin is.
He's a robot that apparently became a Prometheus alien thing.
Is that, you figured out more than I have, Eric, so congratulations.
I'm not sure where from the context I gleaned that, but he is, I thought he was like the guy from the movie that was the only interesting character in the movie.
Yes.
But no, he's one of those kind of things, and he became this guy, and I don't care about him.
Yeah. I like Christopher Sabella generally. Everything I've read of him, I've liked. Ariel Olivetti, I'm kind of hit and miss on it, but I think this is actually some of his best work that I've seen.
This is beautiful. That Ariel is a man's name.
It is. He is a gentleman.
He is not a princess.
It's not a princess.
A princess of the sea. Ariel.
But yeah, this is his. He does all the kind of, you know, computer. Eric can describe it more eloquently than I can, but
it's art done by computers.
By computers.
By computers.
He uses beep boops.
Yep.
To make his art.
That's but correct.
This is he. I've known him from his work on Punisher, back in the day.
Back in the day.
This is
Punisher.
A lot
back in the day. I didn't know this that was a series.
It was. This is a lot better than that. And like Eric said, it looks really nice. It's not that the story, like the dialogue and stuff, isn't. Like, it doesn't sound clunky or anything. It's just, I don't know what's happening. I don't know. You have to read the other books in this. You have to know anything about what's happening.
This is a terrible jumping in point.
Yeah.
And even with me, like, I think I might have Googled some stuff and tried to figure out some things, but you still don't know what the hell's going on. And, like, I think it's really hilarious that sort of towards the end of the issue, predators show up and just start killing the fuck out of everybody. And the character is just like, I guess that's happening. Let's keep dealing with what we're dealing with. Let's not even acknowledge these. Well, that guy just stabbed me. I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing.
Yeah. Like, and the fact that why don't they just translate what the predators say?
Because it would actually,
why can't we just,
it would be much more inane. It seems really profound and mysterious. But it would just be like, hey, I'm going to shoot that guy.
I guess that's true, but
why are all these guys ignoring us?
Me and I just did, I totally just did my uncloak from invisibility and stab a dude.
Yeah.
Did not have the desired effect.
What's wrong with these guys?
I totally just shot my laser thing right through him. No response.
Who's that alien robot guy? I didn't even see him introduced. What's happening? The story makes no sense.
And I was like, I had heard that, oh, maybe you could read these individually. No. You have to read all that. You have to be in this story to know what's happening.
Yeah.
If you're reading all this stuff, I would say buy it. It's probably makes sense to you. Because it's not like it's incoherent or dumb dialogue. It's just, you have to read all of this stuff.
This is not a starting point.
No. So we're a do not. I'm a do not buy. I assume Eric is as well.
I wouldn't recommend it. I mean, I am kind of intrigued because I do enjoy. I mean, it's a guilty pleasure more than anything. Aliens versus Predator and all that stuff.
Oh, I love Predator.
Oh, I do too. I mean, I really wanted to love Prometheus.
Yeah, I wanted think a lot to of love people it. Wanted
oh
to
yeah.
Like
it. It's dumb. It's a fun read. I don't read it
unless you're reading all the other ones.
It makes zero sense. This is a weak single issue. Who are all these people that I don't care about? Doesn't matter. They're all dead now.
Exactly. So I guess we're a double do not buy.
Yeah.
I'll
come down on that side.
Yeah. If you're reading it, I'm very curious about what the other one series are, because I do want to, like, I desperately wanted Prometheus to make sense in context of everything, but. Oh well. We have an audible at the last minute, because we both read it anyway, a la Miss Marvel, so we might as well include it, and that is Copperhead number 2, written by Jay Faber, Scott Godlewski on art, colors, Ron Reilly, Thomas Maurer on letters. Continues right. We both really enjoyed the first issue, and I like this one a lot as well.
Yeah,
it's very good.
This is a good book.
It is. This cemented its status in my head. As long as this book exists, I'm gonna be checking it out because it's really good. It's a lot of fun. What's her name? I can't think of her name right now. Clara, her son, Zeke, was off in the desert trying to help a girl find her dog, and then they meet this mysterious figure, and they're shooting giant bug guys.
I mean, why not?
Meet the town, the drunk doctor who's trying to patch up one of
the
victims.
The drunk doctor is little person Jim Gordon.
He is kind of. I don't think Jim Gordon's ever been that drunk, but it looks like Jim Gordon.
I think I look like Jim Gordon and I was 4 feet tall, I would I'd get hammered.
Especially if you're stuck on this alien planet.
Oh yeah.
But we got the mystery. We got that. It's a really touching scene at the end with the mother alien that got arrested.
Hmm.
Yeah. That moment of like genuine emotion with this giant, you know, gummy alien. The fact that it does make you feel kind of empathetic to her story and feel bad for her, that her whole family's kind of been massacred while she was stuck in jail. And there's kind of this interesting mystery. The story moves very quickly. Dialogue, we touched upon this in the first issue. Great. Really, it feels natural. I think we use this comparison all the time to illustrate things that are, it's like Saga in that the universe is like there.
Mm-hmm.
This whole world, it kind of exists and we're just watching it. It's not necessary. It doesn't feel fabricated, which is, I think, one of the best compliments you can pay it.
No, absolutely.
And the art's very good. It's still Would you agree on that one as well, Eric?
It's strong, very clean, tells the story very well. I mean, I don't think it's, I'm not going to say this is Artist of the Year, but this is a book I could read for years. You know, I think I could see this going strong for a long time.
Yeah. There's a lot of, good seeds planted here that could, you know, lead to a lot of good stories.
Absolutely.
It's kind of the whole, I think we touched on this in the first issue that the story itself is like, oh, a human lady sheriff on a, you know, a desert planet, like a, you know, is kind of, you know, it's a west, like a space western is kind of done to death. But the fact, like the how fresh this can feel tells you how that this is, you know, very unique and very good. So I'm certainly a buy.
Yeah. You should buy this weird alien story.
Yes. Buy the, yeah, exactly.
I didn't even notice the plot twist at the end.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about? I just saw it on the last page.
What, Ishmael?
Yeah. What he has in his bag.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I didn't see that. That's interesting.
Yeah. It is.
There we go.
There we go. Yeah, we'll have to see what happens. But that's copyright number 2. We are a double buy. Let's go pick up that book. It's really good. We're moving on to DC and what is probably the biggest release of the week. The most hyped release, for sure, of this week. And that is Batgirl number 35. In this case, I do not know why they just didn't relaunch with a number 1.
Mm.
It doesn't make any sense.
Well, then they all have the same number.
Ugh.
That's important.
Is it?
Yeah.
I think it... I
believe, I don't know why I'm so whiny.
Yeah. I think when Superman relaunched with Jeff Johns and John Romita Jr., they asked Joe Quesada about the numbering. And like, because Superman didn't renumber. And they were bragging, oh yeah, we didn't renumber and we still sold like so many copies or whatever. And Joe Quesada was like, well, if you had made it a number 1, you would have sold twice that. So I don't understand. And especially in a case like this, when this is a new team, a definitely new direction.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, I don't see it. There's no reason for it not to, you know, get relaunched. But regardless, it's Batgirl number 35, written by Cameron Stewart and Brendan Fletcher, art by Babs Tarr, Cameron Stewart doing breakdowns with Maris Wicks on colors, and Jerry K. Fletcher on letters. This is much heralded. This thing got announced months ago, and ever since, all your Tumblrs have been overloaded with drawings of the new costume, which is pretty sharp. I do like it. This is seeing Babs, Barbara. I like that they got it Babs to draw it, to draw Babs. That is very poetic. But Babs Barbara Tarr. Gordon, yeah, Barbara Gordon is moves to the hip Brooklyn of Gotham, basically, to Burnside, which apparently is a new creation, is just basically Hipsterville.
Yes.
And her as, this is us following her as a young college student dealing with young college student things and also being a superhero. I am dying to know what you think about this, Eric.
Honestly, I'm shocked that you wouldn't think I would like this.
I don't know. Why do you
not enjoy it?
I do like it a lot.
I enjoy it thoroughly. It's got some elements of being pandering and cheesy, but it still works really well for me. I still like it.
I was going to say the thing that makes me want to curious is the fact that we are often critical of comic books that try and do like, hey, look, it's Twitter. Hey, it's Instagram. Hey,
yes.
Like this book, it's been mentioned elsewhere online. It's in that, you know, this book has Twitter and Instagram and Tinder and Snapchat, just different names, but all those kind of social media apps are all used as at least, you know, different iterations of them are used in this book. And I'm just curious if you thought it was a little overdone in that regard, because that'd be what I would think your criticism would be.
I do think that the thing is I think you can safely ignore all that and just sort of roll your eyes at it and let it go on.
Right.
There's a lot of good meat to this, and there's a lot of stupid cheesiness in this. You just sort of have to focus on what works. The thing that I really like about it,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know where you're gonna fall on this scale, but one of the things that I really enjoy, this is a very sexy book. And, you know, I think that they go out of their way to make, you know, superhero books very sexy. Mm-hmm. They go out of their way to make everyone seem like normal.
Right.
Like humans. And it's really kind of hot. I don't know. It's kind of nice to see young women acting like young women. And I don't know. I appreciate that.
Right. I understand what you're saying. It makes sense. And I agree with you. It starts off with her being blackout drunk, not remembering what happened the night before, which, you know, it's something a 20-year-old would do. Mm-hmm. I did it. I was an idiot and drank too much at certain times. I don't remember what happened. Everyone does, you know, when you're young and dumb, you do stupid things. And I think they go to a great length to show that. It's interesting that they show that Barbara is just another, they're people first.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, it still is, and I think that the social media stuff is a little, it's going to make this look dated in a couple years.
Yeah.
Probably. But the kind of funness that's in it, like the sense of it, like fun and light adventure, overwhelms all that, the negative, the light negative feelings I have for it. It's not, we read the previous Batgirl, while not being bad, it was still kind of just grim and dark, and this is certainly not that. It's interesting and fun.
This villain and the way she beats him makes zero sense.
I don't think it's supposed to make too much
sense. No, if you think about it too long, I'm pretty sure your brain will melt and run down the side of your, you know, your shirt.
Mm-hmm.
It's not good.
But I even though the way she beats him is really dumb.
Yes.
I do like that is how, like, that is what her villain, like, that is what she's taking on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a representation of misogyny.
Mm-hmm.
In the book. And that's kind of what this book is doing in real life. Kind of.
Yeah.
Is trying to, you know, take on that idea. And the fact that you know, she's, before they rebooted her and gave her back her legs, her mobility, Oracle is still how I think, I still think of Barbara Gordon as Oracle before I think of her as Batgirl. And I think that giving her this kind of, you know, photographic memory and programming thing and making that such a focal point, I think that's really interesting as well. And I think that's a very smart thing to do. It differentiates her from all the other Bat people really well, making that the focus. But I'm a buy.
Yeah, I bought this twice.
He did. It's really good. Double buy, Batgirl number 35. Next up is Batman number 35. The numbers match.
That's important to keep the numbers going.
Yeah, they have to look the same.
If they're not the same, I don't know. I don't know what to do.
Yeah. This is Batman Endgame Part 1. Written by Scott Snyder, pencils by Greg Capullo, inks Danny Meekie, colors FCO Placentia, letters Steve Wands. This is seeing Batman do battle with the entire Justice League, who are obviously under the control of someone or something. They're trying to take him out. And we see Batman basically enact all these protocols that he's had in place, you know, beforehand so he can do battle, handle all of these super people. I like this issue. I went in not expecting to like it, but I liked it.
Yeah, I pretty much expect to hate all of these. And all of these Capullo Snyder stories that seems like it's stuff that you've read before, but there is something, there's some gem in them that makes them sort of enjoyable. Mm-hmm. This is the same thing. I mean, there's nothing about this story when you get to the reveal at the end, you're like, oh my God, this is so good. I've never seen this before. You're like, hey, this is really beat up, but whatever. This was still kind of fun to read. But yeah, it's, I don't know, it's not amazing. It's very good art, very fun.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. This is probably my... Although the Zero Year art was also... I never had a problem with the art.
It was also very good, but I think this is more consistently good, and it's got more variety.
Mm-hmm.
I think just by introducing the rest of the Justice League, like, I really like the way he handles Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
I think she looks really cool.
I was going to say Aquaman, actually, himself, that he looks looking a little Benedict-y Cumberbatch-y, but if you look at his steely gaze on what
holy shit, he totally does.
I still like it. It still looks good. And Aquaman I don't know why they named cast Benedict Cumberbatch in that Justice League.
Probably because he can't do.
Khal Drogo does not scream Aquaman to me, but whatever.
You have to hear these guys do an American accent before you cast them for that.
You can have Aquaman be British, whatever.
No. I guess.
No, but Wonder Woman does look good. She looks like Wonder Woman. She's muscly and broad-shouldered, mm-hmm. and obviously can take on Mecha Batman.
Yeah, you hit her with a tank and she laughs it off.
But, it's better than the sum of its parts,
mm-hmm.
I would say. It doesn't hurt the fact that they just get right to it. Like, it's not like we get 20 pages of nothing and then one last page. Uh-oh, the Justice League is going to fight. They just start fighting, which is, that's good. Gets to the action. What do you think about the backup story?
I was really sort of shocked to see this. Let me review it. It feels very, very Vertigo.
Well, art is Kelly Jones.
That explains why it's so ugly. I can't remember if we've talked about Kelly Jones.
I think
except we
mentioned him briefly.
I think he did like a pinup in like a Batman Black and White that we read together.
I think
so. About him briefly. That explains this looks like so 90s Vertigo. Really just bad overacting. Everything's juxtaposed really weird. It makes the story seem weaker. It's corny as fuck. And I don't like it.
No, it does scream kind of Vertigo.
Mm-hmm.
And just weird. Hey, look, like it's a crazy, weird story of Batman.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not original in any way. This is not.
No.
No, this has been done before, and it just feels tired. And the art is... everything Eric described.
Yeah.
Luckily, I didn't mind it because the regular issue, I enjoyed it enough that I didn't care about a backup. That was strange. But the backup itself is, pass.
Yeah.
Can I?
I think if I could pay a dollar less.
And not have the backup, I agree with you.
Yeah.
But I still say it's a buy because the story, mm-hmm. I like the story well enough. I think it's very interesting. At least it's executed very well.
Yes.
Yes. So that's a double buy. Batman number 35. Move on to our Marvel books. Starting off with Avengers number 36. 7 months, time runs out. Written by Jonathan Hickman. Art by Stefano Caselli. Colors by Frank Martin. Letters by Corey Pettit. I have fluctuating emotions about this comic book.
Hmm.
We got a Miranda shot in here, though.
Well, it's been a while since we've seen those.
Not as obvious. She's holding the baby. Page 7.
Well, it doesn't even count, right?
That doesn't count? Okay. She's holding the baby, doesn't count?
I guess you're right. But I mean, it's the dude's got a butt shot, too.
Yeah, but he's wearing black pants. You can't see it.
I can see a line. That's all you need. That'll do you.
That's all you need. But the events of this issue do deal a lot with a lot of the... ideas built up of Hickman that he's built up in this run so far of bringing Hyperion over the Aelifs and the Ex Nihilo and all that weird builder stuff that he, that a lot of it was tackled in Infinity along with Nightbrand and Star Mask and all these people with these titles and how they deal with the universe. A lot of this issue, I'm just like, what's happening? I'm not sure. But then at the end, you got Hyperion, like, one-armed Thor looking really badass, marching off into, like, a suicide mission.
Yes.
It's hard to not, like, go, oh, that's cool.
Yes. Yeah. That's kind of my feeling as well. But I do agree with you that it's a little messy. It's a little confusing. You're kind of scratching your head a little bit. Feels kind of not as strong as it could be, but it's still, I don't know. I think it's still worth picking up. I wonder if this is going to redeem itself or ever make sense to me.
I think we'd have to read all the Avengers books because I've not read them all. We read through it.
We've read a lot of them.
We've read all the Infinity books. We've touched and we've hit here and there on the main Avengers run. We did not get every single issue. We've been pretty steady with new Avengers. But Avengers, adjectiveless Avengers, we have not read all of them. I think probably help us a little bit if we read all of them. But that's kind of, when you're reading the Hickman book, that's kind of what happens near the end of his runs. Like, they're very continuity heavy. Like, that Fantastic Four, those Fantastic Four books. Like, if you had just picked up one of the issues, like, two-thirds of the way through, it would make little to no sense.
Yes.
But I like Caselli's art in this a lot. I like this book, even though some of it's kind of incomprehensible if you haven't been reading. But I still enjoy it. I still would say it's a buy for me.
It's a bit nuanced, but sure. What song do you think they're going to play on their first suicide mission? Because it's clear they're like a Viking metal band.
Amon Amarth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they're going to sing a song about killing Irishmen.
It's not the first thing I would say, but it's certainly get some Amon Amarth and then probably like 3 inches of blood or something to offset it a little bit and get some power metal in there.
Sure.
But that's certainly what's going to happen. There's going to be lots of metal.
Mm-hmm. I like
torn capes.
Was this the one? No. He doesn't throw his axe in this one.
No, that's the...
He throws his axe in Sixus.
In Sixus, which is... We're double by Avengers number 36. And lastly, as Eric already said... Sixus, which our mutual friend Matt, he had said, you know, he had jokingly said, I read Sixus. I'm like, it's not Sixus, it's Axis. And I never really even thought about it. But now looking at the logo, I can't not see it.
You can't not see Sixus.
I just see Sixus because there's a giant line running through the A and it makes it look like it says Sixus. But
well, the A looks exactly like the IS at the end.
It does. It really does. And I think they're trying to be clever about that, but.
They were definitely trying to be very cute with it.
Yeah, but this is Axis Avengers and X-Men number 1. That's a long title, and I guess they're going to title all these books Axis something or other. Written by Rick Remender, art by Adam Kubert. Laura Martin and Matt Miller doing the colors. Chris Alopoulos doing the letters. This is Red Supremacy, Chapter 1. Eric, why is this, like, boxed on the top and bottom like we're watching a widescreen TV?
But it's important for us to see Sixus a whole shitload of times.
I know, dear Lord, it's all...
That is the dumbest thing. I read mine for the first time on my phone, so it cut all that bullshit out. Like, if you do the enhanced mode, it zooms around in the panel and you don't even see that.
I should probably...
That is a huge mistake, and it is entirely possible...
It's only the first so many pages, but still, why?
It could just be that the artist made it in the wrong aspect just for the sake of carelessness or something. I don't know. But that seems like it seems like a cover up for a mistake. Like he might have run out of time and made it in the wrong, just made it the wrong size. And this was the best result they could come up with to fit it in there. I sincerely doubt that was an intentional, like, let's put Axis at the top and bottom a whole bunch of times.
Yeah. So
that's dumber than hell.
Yeah. I don't, if you're not aware of what Axis is, it's basically Red Skull has Xavier's brain grafted on, right? He goads Magneto into killing him and he is reborn as the reincarnation of Onslaught, except he's the Red Onslaught. now. He's Red Skull. It's
really,
Onslaught.
Really clever.
Yeah. And now obviously the whole Marvel Universe is attacking him. We had talked about this briefly. How, I mean, last week's Captain America. Captain America and this has been written by Rick Remender. Last week's Captain America was very weirdly quippy. And we kind of talked about that briefly. This one is also weirdly quippy.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really...
Does not work at all.
No, it feels weird. Like, Beast... I'm going to read what Beast says on a big giant panel, two-page panel that covers the top two-thirds of the page, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get Hulk and Iron Fist and Kitty Pryde and, you know, all these different heroes all flashing in it. And Beast says, X-Men and Avengers, I'd tell you to assemble, but that'd be showing favoritism. So instead, and then in a big, you know, comic booky font, let's crack some skull.
It's the Red Skull. Do you get it?
I got it. I it's not that I don't understand. Ha ha ha.
Well, that's that bothered me less because it is Beast.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just sort of known for saying wordy dumb shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's the stuff at the beginning where everybody's cracking wise. I just like, I mean, it happens all throughout the book.
Yes.
And everyone's saying smart-ass shit to each other. And it's dumb as hell. It doesn't work. I don't know. I don't understand. It really does. It feels really put on.
And there's a very uneven tone in this book with the quipping. And then the fact, I mean, we get Ahab jumping in because Ahab's around for some reason. And he spears Genesis, Kid Apocalypse, right through the chest. And then we see Quentin Quire in the face down in a pool of blood. And then nothing happens. Like, and people are just like, burr, 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 quippy. I'm like, a dude just got stabbed in the chest. Is he okay? You might want to check on him.
He's Apocalypse.
He's fine. He's fine. He's Apocalypse. What a Quentin Quire. He ain't no Apocalypse. He's just a kid with brain powers. He's got a Tim Roth level of blood pouring out of him. And I understand he's a mutant that'll make... It's on the last page, too. The Axis thing on the top and bottom.
Yeah, it is.
It's weird that it's on, like, the first five pages and then on the very last page. It's very strange. The tone is not even. Like, if you're going to have, like, a big event where it's Red Onslaught and he has adamantium Stark Sentinels attacking, like, keep it that tone throughout the whole book. Having, like, that weird quippy stuff and then having people get impaled and then weird quippy stuff, like this is the same guy who wrote Uncanny X-Force and never had that problem. Like, it managed that tone very well by keeping it dark, but not, you know, they managed to keep it light enough but managed that tone really well. I don't know why this event, it's a very similar kind of idea where, you know, they're superheroes trying to save the world from a really dark force, why it's not... It doesn't feel the same to me. And I really wanted to like this event. I thought when this kind of idea first came about, when Red Skull was present in Uncanny Avengers, that first run, I was kind of curious about how it would turn out. It seems like just to jump really quickly to every single superhero suddenly present. And it just went from zero to 100 very quickly. And not necessarily very eloquently.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to probably keep reading this because I want to like it, but I can't wholeheartedly suggest this book to someone just jumping in. Maybe looking back, the whole event will even out, but so far I'm going to say, wait, do not buy.
I can get behind that sentiment.
Like, see what happens before you start investing in this story. There's plenty of good comics out there. You can spend your money elsewhere, I would say. So that's a double do not buy on Sixes. Access number one, Avengers and X-Men, whatever the hell else they want to add on to all this garbage. I also want to...
Good yawn.
Yeah, exactly. It's getting a little late, you guys. I don't know if you realize that. Why does Hobgoblin need an Access title? I don't understand why he is. It's very strange to me. just to throw it out there. I also read Annihilator number 2, which is the Grant Morrison Irving Fraser book.
Uh-oh.
It's similar to that first one.
Okay.
It's Grant Morrison pretentiousness with beautiful artwork. So, you know, if you like the first one, you'll like the second one. If not, it seems like it's going to be what it is.
So it's not for me yet.
Probably not.
Okay.
You can read it when I buy the trade. I also read Captain Marvel 8. It is adorable. Rocket Raccoon and Captain Marvel's flirking cat, her cat, it's really good. I like it a lot.
I don't know how I missed Captain Marvel.
I showed you that panel from it.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking of Miss Marvel because I don't understand the difference between things.
They both have a word in them.
They do. They're both made of letters.
Yes. I think that will be it for Weekly Floppies, though. And
time to flop it on over.
Time to flop it out for the flop it off, I guess, for the week.
Mm-hmm.
Unflop. And we're going to jump over to our last segment of the week. Put on your glasses because it is time for Nerd Boy Book Club. Nerd Boy Book Club is a segment where Eric and I will assign a longer collected work, generally, and read it, discuss it at length. More depth, necessarily, than you probably would get in Weekly Floppies or anywhere else, for that matter. This week, we are doing The Adventures of Superhero Girl by Faith Erin Hick, by Colors by Chris Peter. This was originally a web comic that now has been published in
a real-life book.
Real-life hardcover landscape-style book.
Bookie book.
Eric had the idea for this one. After it was Faith Erin Hick's. I believe we've told the story 3 times now on the podcast, but she
probably just twice. This will be the second time.
Okay, I wasn't sure.
I'm sure I have told it around you many, many times.
Yes.
Do you want to tell it this time?
No, you can handle it. You're good at it now. You practiced.
I do so love telling stories. So. She had been nominated for the Eisner. She was at, you know, the San Diego event, and she wasn't expecting to win. She said she had prepared a speech anyway. And she said when they called her up there to accept the Eisner, you know, they announced she had won, she was so overwhelmed, she got to the podium, she couldn't even give her speech. She just burst into tears and just cried and cried and cried. And then when it was all over, she went and got Breakfast Buffet. And that is how you end every story.
Go and get Breakfast Buffet.
I don't think we've... I think this is the second time.
Okay.
Because it was right after the Eisners I told the story because she was posting.
I think she told me it and then I edited it out. Because I was like...
I don't remember. I thought it was in it.
I don't remember. I mean, not the second time. Not the first time.
Maybe. I don't know. I have repeated the story many times. It's one that I love telling. It's really funny to me.
No, it's a very good story. And it honestly, it kind of informs at least the feeling you get when you read this book. Like, because that, it demonstrates her genuineness. How yes. much she honestly loves comic books. Loves the mm-hmm. art form. And that it winning the Eisner overwhelmed her so much. It demonstrates her intentions, I guess, when making art like this and how much she genuinely does care about it. And that comes through in this book. It is very touching and kind of heartwarming and charming and fun. All of those things. It's really wonderful. I guess there is kind of an overarching plot. It's not really continuity heavy in any regard. It feels like a webcomic in that regard, I'd say.
It really feels like a webcomic.
But I think in the best way possible, I guess you could say. It's a webcomic in the best way possible. It follows the adventures of Superhero Girl as the title. It's a title that is extremely accurate. And, you know, and she's a kind of low level, at least she has, super strength and heat vision.
She's like old Superman.
Before he could fly.
Yeah.
Yeah, when he could just...
They even make that joke.
They do.
Like, it's lame. You can't fly. What's wrong with you?
But she's just trying to make her name for herself, trying to be, like, her brother is also has superpowers and is much well more known because he can fly.
He's also, like, his superhero name is Kevin?
Yeah.
That's really weird.
Yeah, I don't know. I think want to say that's just kind of an even greater, I think it's to add on to her feelings of inadequacy compared to him. Because he's just Kevin and it all works for him. It just seems effortless. But, you know, she's just trying to deal with her being a young person in Canada. And being a superhero and, you know, not getting appreciated and dealing with giant cat tentacle monsters, which are really cute and adorable.
You're gross.
And actual cats as well. She rescues a cat.
Yes.
Early on in the story that eventually becomes her actual cat.
Her roommate is allergic to cats and somehow doesn't care.
Maybe she's only very mildly allergic. That's the only thing I could think of. Or she keeps the cat in her room most of the time, I think it wouldn't be a problem. How would you describe her art style, Eric?
I think it's got some aspects like I could compare it to O'Malley.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got a little bit of that sort of simplicity and naivete, but it's more sophisticated than that. Like she can draw like a very, because I've also read Friends with Boys, which I wanted to suggest, but I also wanted to read this because this is what she won the Eisner for.
Mm-hmm.
But she's able to create like a very rich panel. She'll flesh out a very nice and full background. You know, she's got very good mark making and just, I don't know, can create a real sense of a whole world going on. And I think she does a very good job in this as well. You know, everything really comes well together. Friends with Boys is entirely black and white. This is obviously full color, but it all still works together pretty well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is doing its own job. So, you know, it's good times. One of the things that is pretty noticeable about this compared to some of her other work is how it's and you know, I did bring up O'Malley, but it is even maybe so more graphic in nature like that. And I think it's because she is doing so much, you know, that she's keeping the characters more graphic. She's keeping the backgrounds a little bit more graphic. Some of them are just completely flat. And she's throwing in, you know, Photoshop filters and color fields and things like that to sort of round everything out. So she's kind of using all of her tricks to flesh it out as opposed to, you know, something like Friends with Boys where it was just all ink work and it had to make everything feel really full.
It's those like backgrounds, those, you know, the photoshopped just filters.
The half tones.
Yeah, yeah. It actually kind of dovetails into something I was going to mention, that this book is really, it's a very interesting juxtaposition of a very kind of modern story rooted in a female superhero that's very grounded, you know, her rooted in her day-to-day life and her struggles in a very kind of basic way, but it's juxtaposed with a very kind of nostalgic look at superhero comics. Like we had already mentioned the reference to the old Superman when he couldn't fly. And those backgrounds make me think of the old newsprint. You know, how, you know, they're printed in,
yeah, it's a four color process. I mean, it's definitely done on purpose to hearken you back to the big fat half tones and bad printing.
Yeah. And I think that's like, did you read the introduction by Kurt Busiek?
I did not.
He basically, like, he started off by, like, they found this book because he wanted to have his daughters, give his daughters, like, comic books, but they'd, like, generally stuff more like this. They had read Raina Telgemeier's Smile, which we have read before the podcast, and they wanted something in the same vein, and he writes that he had kind of jumped to a conclusion and called this a parody of superhero comics. That then he kind of retracts that statement and you know says that his initial thoughts were kind of wrong. It's not really a parody. It's really just It is just a superhero story, but one that just happens to be centered around a young female superhero. It really is. I can understand why he jumped to that conclusion, because it really is. It uses the language that has been kind of created over 70 years of superhero comics. And it uses that to tell the story kind of very quickly. It sets us those, it gives us those kind of, I don't want to call them, those conceptions basically of what a superhero comic is and what it is not, and uses them to quickly, you know, jumpstart the story and give us, you know, uses those archetypes to tell the story, but also kind of even offsets those archetypes by giving us this kind of story where we're seeing a similar story like this in Ms. Marvel. That is obviously more rooted in kind of cultural norms of Kamala being Muslim. But this is a kind of a similar feeling, I think. But, I mean, you see her kind of do very kind of simple, like, I don't think it's a coincidence that within the second page we see her rescuing a cat. But, and I think it's very interesting that her, you know, we have that idea of, you know, it's like, it's even like use a shorthand in film writing. Save the cat. Have you heard that?
No, I've not.
Okay, it's basically a shorthand in film writing. Any kind of writing, honestly. But it was made famous for film writing that have a protagonist very quickly have them have a moment where they save the cat.
Mm-hmm.
Where we see them, quickly see them do something heroic, and that is plainly heroic. So that we have rooting interest in them. Oh, obviously they're a good person. They saved that cat. Mm-hmm. And things like that. But she does that on the second page, and she does it by uprooting a tree, which I think that's really interesting. That this book is constantly both reminding you that, you know, this is a young female superhero, but then juxtaposing that, you know, we see a superposition of her doing these things that are, like, decidedly not feminine, even. Uprooting a tree is the just that first example. And, like, you know, she shrinks her cape, or she's not good at... they are constantly trying to subvert your expectations of what a young female superhero is. And do you think that is... I understand. I know that most of it is purposeful. Like, I think it's the point where she encounters this young kid multiple times throughout the story.
Her arch nemesis, the naysayer.
Yeah, the naysayer. And how direct do you think that intention is to show her as, like, having not necessarily in the story being her a young superhero that's struggling to find an identity, but in comics. In a greater subtext, that he represent the typical male comic fan? Do you think?
I think it's hard to not see it as that. And all the women that I've talked to about this kind of thing, I got into a long dragged out conversation about there was a girl at Dragon Con dressed as Commander Keen. Did I tell you about this young lady?
I don't think so, no.
She was delightful. I talked to her and her two friends for probably about an hour and a half. But she said that every time she goes to the comic book store or the game store or whatever, I think it was the game store mostly she was talking about, that, like, she basically, like, they wouldn't remember her, and she was constantly having to reprove her nerd cred.
Right.
And I think that it's that whole fake geek girl mentality that spurns all this on. Well, oh, you don't have this tragic backstory. You're not a real superhero. You're not a real fan of comics. You're not a real gamer. It's a lot about a girl's experience in nerd culture.
Right. It doesn't necessarily have to be read that way, but it is a subtext that is almost omnipresent. Yeah. Like, it can, you don't have to read that into this comic. It could be a fun superhero adventure kind of story without any of that subtext there, but it certainly is present. This book is also very Canadian. Like, I think it's funny that you
yes.
made the O'Malley reference because.
Oh, yeah.
They're, I think that's also.
They spell Czech with a Q.
Yeah, there's a prime minister.
There's a prime minister.
Who appears.
There's, I mean, in Friends with Boys, it wasn't completely clear where it was told. They never specifically say it's in old Canada.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the jock kid is a volleyball player.
Yeah.
And it happens in a town with, like, history.
History? What's that?
I know, right? It's someone shows you a building. This is built in the 50s. Wow!
I don't know. I'm trying to think about how there's in the narrative, she ends up fighting a future version of herself.
Yeah.
And it's not that. It's just she's gotten tired of being underappreciated and not respected. And so mm-hmm. she's kind of turned into this corrupted version of herself. And she ends up sucker punching back through time and space, which is wonderful. And it is a kind of a kind of another self-referential joke about time travel in comic books. I don't know. I'm trying to think of if that is some sort of, I mean, the whole book is fighting for respect and trying to find your identity.
Right. To me, the whole idea of it almost feels like the artist saying, I'm really afraid of selling out, or I'm afraid of not doing what I want to do. And this is me when I'm 30, 35, whatever the hell number she throws out there. She said Mama turns 30 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And how she's like, well, I'm going to start doing these things and I'm going to be a sellout. And I'm really worried about that. That's how I read that. That's something that she's saying. She's worrying about herself. It's hard for me to read that as anything else. I mean, I can read that as, you know, the literal characters, but that's the subtext that I get out of that completely.
Yeah. And we were talking about this, the subtext of what you read into this character's search for respect and identity. But I don't want to gloss over the fact that this is a very fun and funny, charming story. Like, it's very clever and funny, and there's many pages with kitty dog piles. So, you know, I'm a fan already.
Of course you are. Jesus.
Kitties!
Kitties!
Exactly, kitties. What do you think of the name?
The Adventures of Superhero Girl?
Well, Superhero Girl, specifically. She couldn't think of a real name, so she just gave her the name Superhero Girl. And I think that's, with what we've already talked about, I think that's very interesting, because it doesn't give her, it kind of paints her as every superheroine, kind of.
Hmm.
She's super, you know, it makes her that kind of everyman.
Yeah, she's a bit. That's an interesting thought. You know, it flattens her out. It makes her generic for sure. But it's kind of in the way that Harry Potter is flat and generic, and you more quickly put yourself into her shoes.
Yes.
I don't know. She's pretty easy to identify with.
Yeah, she's
go ahead.
No, so she's facing very, even, I compare this to the new Miss Marvel, and I think, I mean, even this even more so, where she's clearly more of a easier stand-in for the reader, where she's, because Miss Marvel Kamala is obviously, you know, Muslim teenager, female. We don't have that perspective. This is, you know, just a young woman who's she's under her brother's shadow, trying to make a name for herself, trying to get, you know, find her identity. I think that's I think that's that Adventures of Superhero also kind of hammers that home. Cause it, you know, she's, it's funny that, you know, Faith Erin Hicks herself couldn't, is trying to think of a name for the, for her superhero and couldn't. And superhero girl herself is trying to think, trying to find what she is, find herself a superhero, find herself as a superhero.
It says an awful lot about who Faith is.
I would recommend this to pretty much anyone.
Mm-hmm.
This is the best example of an all ages comic. Like, you could give this to a 5-year-old or a 75-year-old, provided they like words with pictures.
I don't know any 75-year-olds that like, read comics.
No, I don't either.
That don't own comic book stores.
I know there's not very many of them, but I would still recommend this book to them.
Totally.
It's very good. It's very fun. The art's great. It's charming. Anything else you want to touch on before we close up shop, Merrick?
Not so much.
Okay. Well, that was The Adventures of Superhero Girl by Faith Erin Hicks. Great book. Very good. We heartily recommend. If you guys have not picked it up yet, please do so. It's really good. Next week, I insist we do Fatale. That's next week is Fatale, the entirety of it. The last volume is just released. Ed Brubaker, Sean Phillips. Really great. Interesting blend of noir and horror that I had not seen before in comics. And it is a really great exploration of the femme fatale. So that is Fatale volumes 1-5 next week from Nerd Boy Book Club. With that, we will bring this episode to a close. We are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us at handsomeboyscomicshour.com. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/handsomeboyscomicshour. You can find us on Twitter at HBCHour. We're on iTunes. We are on Stitcher. If you listen to us, if you like us, please leave us a good review. Leave us a, you know, rate, subscribe. It really helps us out, gets us more eyeballs. We need those eyeballs.
Earballs.
Need earballs. You can also find us, you can email us, handsomeboyscomics@gmail.com. Google us. There's other places. We're tired. It's late. You can get me on Twitter at MixMasterCereal. It's MixMasterCereal. You can see all the stuff I get up to online. I stole Eric's line. See what he does.
I know you did. I don't know what I'm going to do.
Eric, where can they find you online?
You can see my portfolio by going to freewillunlimited.com. You can see all the things that I do that don't involve Robbie by going to ericzgoodnight.com.
Is there anything left?
I need to update it to include all of the stuff, but I am lazy.
Your Inktober stuff.
I have a lot of Inktober and a lot of puking to do. ericzgoodnight.com. See most of the things that I do online. And you can tweet at me. Twitter handle is Mr. Bad Example, spelled MR Bad Example.
And with that, we will call it. Have a good one.
Rock and roll.